This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara, and this is the Kenai Conversation. On today's episode of the Kenai Conversation, we're airing the next installment in KDLL's 2025 Candidate Forum Series, held in conjunction with the Peninsula Clarion and the Central Peninsula League of Women Voters. This forum was held Thursday, September 4th at the Kenai Community Library.
We're live now on KDLL 91.9 FM, on KSRM 920 AM, and on the Peninsula Clarion's Facebook page. We're also streaming live on KDLL.org and on RadioKenai.com. We're broadcasting tonight from the Kenai Community Library. Thank you to the library for the space and for partnering with us to host tonight's forum. And thank you to the Kenai Peninsula League of Women Voters for their support tonight. The League of Women Voters is a grassroots organization working to protect and expand voting rights and ensure everyone is represented in our democracy. The League empowers voters through advocacy, education, and litigation at the local, state, and national levels. You can learn more at alaskalwv.org. Tonight, we're talking to two of our three Kenai City Council candidates and our two Kenai mayoral candidates. City Council and mayoral terms each last for 3 years. Henry Nackstedt and Alex Stoffett are running for Kenai Mayor. Victoria Askin, Bridget Grimmie, and Glenys Petty are running for seats on the City Council. Glenys was unable to be with us tonight. Candidates will each have 90 seconds to make an opening statement. Ashlyn here will let you know when you've got 1 minute, 30 seconds, and 10 seconds left. Candidates will then answer questions that we've generated in advance. They'll have 90 seconds to answer each question, and we'll move up and down the line so every candidate has a chance to answer first. We'll end with 90-second closing statements. So we'll jump right into it. Henry, you've got 90 seconds. Your opening statement, please.
Thank the League of Women Voters for putting this up on, and also KDLL and the Clarion. I'm Henry Nackstedt. I'm running for city mayor, and I'm a 64-year resident of the city of Kenai. Grew up here, obviously. Graduated from Kenai Central High School in 1979. I went to the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, got an engineering degree there, met my lovely wife there, and now we've been married for 39 years. I like to round it up to 40, but it's 39 years. And we have two beautiful daughters, and they're both medical professionals. Since then, back here in Kenai, I've been the chairman of the Airport Commission for 20 years, and then I was also the vice chair of the Planning and Zoning Commission for 4. And currently I'm serving on council for the last 11 years and as the vice mayor in the last 2 years of that 11 years. And been quite involved with the community and vice commander, the commander of the Civil Air Patrol here in Kenai, a pilot, and self-employed as an engineer here in Kenai.
Thank you, Henry. Alex, got 90 seconds.
Well, again, everybody, thank you for putting this on. It's always great to have these forums to get everybody to be able to hear what we have to say. I'm Alex Stoffett. I'm running for mayor. I was born and raised here in the city of Kenai. We have a lot of roots here. Me and my wife and our four boys all reside here. My oldest is headed off to trade school here in just a few short weeks. It's kind of crazy to think. I've already got one moving off to college. We have a business that we've been running here for the last 9 years, have nearly 20 employees throughout the community, and we're heavily invested in the community. As a small business owner, it really gives me a different perspective working day to day with retail and the driver's education side of things, to see what and hear what other community members have to say all the time. I always have a deep-seated feeling of importance within the community, and I want to always help out as much as I can. I was on planning and zoning prior to joining the council. This is my first term on council. I also was on the chamber and the Kenai Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors, and currently I'm residing on that too, helping out with many of their projects and events. It's always been a lot of fun to do that.
Thank you, Alex. Victoria, you got 90 seconds.
Thank you, Jacob. Thank you for putting this on. It's always kind of I'm nervous, but at least, but it's always a good thing to have happen. I am looking for re-election to the city council. I'm ending my first term. Before that, I was on the Harbor Commission and planning and zoning over the last 15 years. And I'm a 40-year resident of the Kenai, and my husband and I raised four children here, two of whom are still here. And I'm also treasurer on the Historical Society and a board member of the Community Foundation. I feel I want to give back to the city, and I support programs for children and seniors alike, and I would really look forward to serving another term for the city of Kenai.
Thank you. Bridget.
So yeah. There you go. Hi, I'm Bridget Grimmie. I am also running for Kenai City Council. I have not served before, so I'm a newbie, but I am a lifelong Alaskan. I was born and raised in North Pole, Alaska. I've lived here in Kenai since 2002 with my husband of 28 years next month, and we have two adult children, both of whom live here on the peninsula as well. My son is a police officer, and my daughter is a student who's looking to join the Air Force soon. I have been employed by the Division of Juvenile Justice for 23 years. I was a juvenile probation officer. I then became an information systems coordinator, and now I'm the data processing manager for the Division of Juvenile Justice statewide. In my capacity as a mom and as a professional, I've served in a lot of different leadership roles and committee roles, everything from PTA and site council and church councils to den leader and presidents of different things and secretaries of, I think, everything. My children are grown now. I have a little bit more time to dedicate to things that they aren't involved in. And I love living in Kenai. I love working in Kenai. And I want to be part of making this and continuing to keep this a great place where other people want to live and work.
Thank you, Bridget. Now we'll move on to the question portion of our forum. Each candidate will have 90 seconds, right? The script says 2 minutes. 90 seconds to answer each question. And we'll start with Alex this time. Among the tasks the city council has to complete each year is approval of the city's annual budget. When you look at the city spending plan for the current fiscal year, are there areas where you think the city is spending too much? Are there areas where you think the city isn't spending enough? What's your budget philosophy? Well said.
Yeah, that's exactly how I would have said. Possibly more fuel.
The budget is, it's a huge process. The city staff puts a ton of time and effort into it. They're always looking for efficiencies and way to become more efficient and cutting costs any way they can. Costs are always rising though. So in some things they can't, healthcare is a huge expense for us and it's always, every year it goes up. So we have to keep budgeting for that. And right now, we've been really fiscally responsible with where we're at and the way we've been for several years. And unfortunately, we've got some very large bills getting ready to come up with infrastructure and some other big projects that we're getting ready to find out how much they're going to cost and where we need to look for it in the future. So this year, and then this budget, I'm pretty proud that we, the way we passed it and then where it's sitting right now. In the future, we're going to have to look at probably having to expand that in some way in the infrastructure and roads and those kind of things, street lights, possible expansion of city buildings or remodeling of some of these buildings that are getting pretty dated. So all these things are stuff we have to start looking forward into the future and how we're going to do this effectively and fiscally responsible. But right now, the way it was passed, I'm happy with it. We had a lot of say in it. There's a lot of good studies coming up that we had to invest for. But in the future, we'll just have to see where we're at as far as the next year's budget. That's going to be coming up with some big expenses, I think.
Thank you, Alex. Victoria.
I, too, was pretty proud with how we finished the budget this year. We're very fiscally responsible. One of the things that I'm pretty proud of is the expenses like a new fire truck or ladder truck is a lot of money. We're talking like $1 million or more. And every year our staff at the city puts aside a certain amount of money. So we're not having to ask for extra bonds. We have that money to spend when we need it. As Alex said, there is some big projects coming up. We're on our 11th year. I think we haven't raised the mill rate, but that's probably going to happen here soon because we're getting down to where we're really close.
Thank you. Bridget?
I think that the thing that makes, I think, one of the Kenai budget a little bit special when you think about other municipal and state budgets is the use of alternative funds. They seem to be really good at finding other income sources, whether it's grants or matching funds or different programs to provide specialized things, not only for, you know, the purchase of fire trucks or new stoplights or streetlights, but also programs at the library. I mean, they lend out all kinds of things you'd never think a library could provide to their residents. And it's not being done at an extra cost. I think that as we continue to spend fiscally responsibly with continued communication between the city employees with the council and figuring out what needs to be done, how do we keep planning for the future and not cutting off our nose despite our face, we will always be one step ahead of ourselves so that we're not finding ourselves in a hole when something comes up that we can't afford.
Thank you. Henry.
The last 11 years, our budget has been reduced in some ways in that, you know, we found efficiencies in the various departments, and you can continue kind of cutting that and creating more efficiencies, and you kind of get asymptotic where you're really not going to, you're not going to save any more on the funds and whatnot. And we're asking an awful lot out of our employees here to do more with less, essentially. And so I really don't see a place where we can be cutting a budget that is the way it is now. But what's been saving us is sales tax primarily, and that's a big chunk of our basic income here. Sales have been increasing quite a bit, and that's been getting us through each time. And unfortunately, we're not getting money from the state to speak of anymore like we used to. Some from the federal government. The library here gets some funding through various grants and whatnot, and that's very good. And those things all do help. But very proud of our budget and our city and how we've been able to maintain that. Now, what I do see needing increases are we have aging infrastructure. Alex mentioned roads, water, sewer, lighting, and whatnot like that. And we're doing inventories on some of that to figure out where the biggest problems are and how we're going to solve that. And again, I think a lot of that we might be able to do ourselves with our own maintenance folks if it's a gravel road, and some of it we may have to contract out. And my time is up.
Thank you, Henry. Moving to Victoria, what do you view as the city of Kenai's greatest asset?
Our citizens, most definitely. I was really proud over the last year, we got to move, the boys and girls got to move into a new, very nice facility. The Triumphant Theater came back, and a lot of our kids are benefiting from that. And just, we have so many neat programs, and our senior program is really strong. It's a good sense of community. And I think it's definitely our citizens. It's all of our people.
Thank you, Victoria. Richard?
Sorry to ride on your coattails, ma'am, but I agree 100%. I think that the people of Kenai are what make it special, and not just us as residents of Kenai, but our sense of community and our sense of responsibility to each other and our desire to want to give back and help on a regular basis. You know, I sat on the site council for Kenai Central High School and Kenai Middle School for many years, and something that they would describe themselves as regularly is a community school. You go to any basketball game, you go to a volleyball game, and you have probably as many people that don't have a kid on that court as do sitting in the stands. And they give back to everything. They give back to the kids in the schools. They give back to our senior programs. They participate in our library programs. They help pick up trash. They show up to plant flowers to make this place better for not themselves only, but all of us. You drive down our streets and you see the sense of commitment and worth and value that we put in our community. And it shows who we are, and it shows others that we love where we live.
Thank you, Bridget. Henry, what's Kenai's greatest asset?
Thank you. You know, having heard that, of course, we'd all want to say it's the people, and of course they're great. But I'm going to take the asset part to be, you know, more of a thing. And as we look around, of course, the library here, I think, is a great asset that we have here in the city of Kenai. I'm very fond of our airport. It's a machine that helps drive our economy here. It's a first class airport with a first class float pond as well. We're going to be putting $21 million into it next year, upgrading that runway, and also it'll be set for if the gas pipeline comes, because there's going to be a lot of traffic coming into that airport, and we've got space on the airport as well, because they'll need to build a terminal most likely for equipment coming in. So that's a machine that helps drive our city. The airport doesn't cost the citizens anything as far as tax money. It is self-sufficient, self-running, with federal government some fundings, but it benefits the government as well. And so that's primarily what I see as our greatest assets are some of those things. Alex?
Thank you, sir. Alex?
What, no motorcycle noise, man. I think I'm going to take this a little bit differently. I see our biggest asset as where we have our potential assets, and that's the lands that city has. The city of Kenai has something that our neighboring city of Soldotna doesn't really have right now. We have the ability to expand. We have large quantities of land that are undeveloped, and what I see those are a very large asset in that we can draw in new people to live here. We just have to make it possible for them to afford to live here, and being able to efficiently develop these lands is where I see a huge possibility for expansion. And also that comes with just simple things that the city can do, like look at rezonings. How do we make these zones economically feasible to be developed, and how can we do these things to, in a future looking to our future, how do we expand, and what can we do to help the citizens that are here now and the citizens that we want to attract? And I see the amount of land that not only the city owns, but that also the undeveloped lands that other citizens own that we can develop into something great. And there's lots of other things, I think, with our Parks and Rec coming up, the master plan, hopefully we can look at some great ideas from the community to develop these into new parks or new features that people want to use, and that'll draw in more of those very valuable assets, which are the citizens. And I think by developing our lands, that's our biggest asset and our biggest strength right now for future growth, is that we have that option, is all the land.
Thank you, Alex. Moving to Bridget with this one. Kenai City Council's recently discussed the need to either renovate or rebuild the city's public safety building, which hasn't kept pace with the growth of the city and its police and fire services. How can Kenai maintain its existing facilities and services, and how should the city strategize for the long term to ensure those resources are able to grow with demand?
I think that thinking one step ahead will help solve your problems today and tomorrow. So, for example, many years ago, they built a new courthouse in Fairbanks. It was absurdly big compared to the previous courthouse, and they had four floors. The fourth one, I don't know that very many people even really knew existed, because it's vacant. It was never finished, but it was built. When they built the courthouse, they built that fourth empty floor thinking about tomorrow. Tomorrow might not be tomorrow. It might be next year. It might be 5 years from now. But when that courthouse needs to expand, they have the infrastructure already in place, and all they have to do is buy some desks, put up some walls, and they can get back to business and in an affordable way. And I think that if we approach problems in that way, thinking about what do we need today, what do we need tomorrow, and how do we fund that today in a way that meets our needs now and gives us options for the future, we can do that fiscally responsibly, but also have what we want and need as well.
Thank you. Henry?
Well, the city safety building, I watched it being constructed. As a matter of fact, my stepfather was the superintendent on that project, but back in 72 or something like that. But it's a building that we've expanded upon, and we're doing a study right now. We're looking at it and how we can expand upon it, and which might mean, can we go up with it, have another floor, at least in some of it, or can we go horizontal, maybe go down for that matter. I think the cost of a whole new building is probably exceeding what our ability is here in the city to be able to pay for. Now, we might be able to get funds from the federal government or something like that for some kind of a safety thing like that. And we'll see if that, what the study shows us. I like the idea of expanding the facility we have. It's centrally located. It's right where we want it. That's why it's where it is. And it's a problem that we don't have a solution for.
Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, I was a big proponent of getting the study done. One of these big things, you know, people don't, they don't like to see the price of a study to see what this, what should we do from a third party's view to see different options to fiscally responsibly be able to expand this. We've outgrown it. It's plain and simple. When this building was built, you know, the one of the prime examples of that, they didn't really think about having female firefighters. Now I think we have at least two. We just hired a new one. So we've got female firefighters in a facility that was never designed for that. So we're greatly expanding beyond what we ever thought was possible. And with this future building, I see ideas of expanding up and out, but also where can we put an additional building? I really do feel that with the size of this and the growth in our community could happen, we might need to build a separate building and separate the police and fire. I really see that as a very big likelihood. And there's lands that the city owns relatively close that they could do that. And sometimes it's honestly cheaper to build something new than try to renovate something old, especially when you start talking asbestos and hazardous materials and all that kind of stuff. Sometimes you've got to look about these different options. And with having these plans, this allows us to show what we need, and then we can apply for federal grant funding to assist with that. There's a lot of different funds out there that we can start looking into to see if that's something that we can do to help offset the cost to the direct cost to the community. But in the long run, it could be looking at a bond package. I mean, that's how this amazing library was built. We saw a need, we built it, and it was approved by the community. So
thank you, Victoria.
Thank you, Jacob. So I agree with Alex that we may have to separate the two. That it's possible there could be an existing building that we could take over. I have an issue with, we spend these thousands of dollars on studies and on research, and it's like, can't we just move along? And that's not the way to do it. But sometimes I think we waste a lot of time thinking about it and not, you know, moving forward. I too see it could go up, it can go sideways, we can add a building. But I think it's very possible that in the future we'll be splitting the fire and the police departments.
Thank you. Bringing it back around to Henry. For years, the city of Kenai has eyed the area around the mouth of the Kenai River as a prime spot for revitalization. What do you think the city should prioritize as it brainstorms a more vibrant waterfront? 90 seconds.
Thank you for the question. I put forth and got rezoning of the riverfront area, as a matter of fact, and that's from the Dobbin Spec Park, basically, or on the bluff there, all the way down to the canneries. And that rezone, what it does is it doesn't change the uses that are already there or anything like that. But what it does is it encourages other types of development in some of those areas that aren't being used any longer for fisheries. Matter of fact, the old Northwest Cannery down there has been sold to a local individual, and they're using it for an RV park and whatnot, and it kind of fits right in. And we have a plan for where trails might go. One of the revitalization projects that I'd like to see happen also is with the Bluff Erosion Project. There's a trail that's on the top. It's 8 feet wide. Basically, if we could get a loop, we have to be able to get to it. We got to get across the creek to it. And then there's also Ryan's Creek by the Senior Center and whatnot. And I could see that becoming a loop that takes us all the way back to Bridge Access Road, back into Count. It's just another place. So we can actually see that beautiful view that's off to the south in the Kenai River. It's something that we pretty much can't see too much in Old Town right now. The way that was developed, now we have the opportunity with the zoning to develop or have the property developed so it can be enjoyed by all of us in the future.
Thank you, Alex.
So yeah, I was part of that conversation when we redid that working waterfront area. I think it's got some great ideas for some partnerships. And that was a big thing is, you know, when we were first starting that, people were really concerned, well, how much is this going to cost the city? What is the cost to the taxpayers for doing this? Oh my gosh. And then the other concern was by landowners. They didn't want to get pushed out of their existing uses. You know, we had a lot of commercial fishing that still happens down there, and they utilize it. And so what we came up with is the working waterfront plan was to kind of merge those two without causing a lot of cost to the city, but working together with private entities to help encourage them to invest in it. We did this study, and it worked out to where people thought, this is a great idea. We want to see this area revitalized. We want to see it. So the community is behind it. So we have that proof. So if you have a developer come in and say, I want to do this, does the community support it? We already have data that says the community does support different ideas of revitalizing that. And I think one of the things the city needs to do is we need to start marketing it better, putting some advertising out there, putting some of these renderings that we paid to have ideas of what's out there, and try to reach out to different investors that say, hey, you could do this. And then possibly the city needs to undertake cleaning up some of the green spaces around there, possibly working on that trail, getting Parks and Rec involved with some of the areas in there to start encouraging that and showing that there's some forward motivation. It's a huge expense for somebody to invest in that. I mean, we're talking, you say, move in a hotel or motel or something big. It would be great to see, but somebody's going to have to make that first step. And we got to find the right person, the right investors to make that happen.
Thank you. Victoria.
Thank you. So the whole area where the revitalization project is only 13% of that property is owned by the city. And I want to see the partnerships happen and visualizing that we have an amazing view of Mount Redoubt, and we need to be marketing to turn right to Kenai and come and see what we've got. And it's going to take partnerships with a lot of private entities to make that come to fruition. And the other thing that I know that the Kenaitse Indian tribe is also interested in, you know, perhaps doing some cultural stuff along the board, if we can do a boardwalk or a walkway and down through where the bluff erosion project is, where that trail could possibly be.
Thank you. Bridget.
I think there's three things that we need to focus on for making the waterfront vibrant. Money, money, and money. People to invest money, people to spend money, and people to make money. All three of those things need to work together to make that what we think it could be in its best form. How we as a city council and as a city can make that happen is, what can we do to creatively motivate people to invest, to build those hotels, to have those stores, to build those trails that are going to bring people that want to stop and have ice cream on the way, or whatever it may be, a place for the dog to play, a place for the kids to play, a place for Kenaitse to share their cultural events with people. All those things cost money. So who can we partner with to make that happen? Is it Kenaitse? Is it investors from other parts of the state? Is it travel advisory boards? What is it? Can we think outside of the box to motivate people to put money into our community and make money from our community so that people will come and spend money in our community?
Thank you. Bringing it to Alex. A cornerstone of Kenai's identity is the city's personal use fishery, which draws residents from around the state to the city every year. Do you support the way the city currently administers that fishery? And is there anything you'd change?
That is an amazing question. The fishery is a love-hate relationship with a lot of people. You know, it feeds the state. The state of Alaska comes to Kenai. Is it a zoo down there? Yes. Has the city in the last 10, 15 years managed to really get it under control? Yes, from 10 or 15 years ago to what it is now, they've done an incredible job managing that fishery. And every year they put more money into that. They reinvest into that fishery to make it better. It is, you know, they've got constant cleanup going down there, garbage removal, more bathrooms being built, bypass roads for efficiency. You know, what they do with the fairly small amount of staff to control thousands upon thousands of people in a very short period of a window is pretty amazing. I think they do a great job with what they have. We can't not allow people to go down there. So when people say, oh, I don't want this fishery, well, legally, we can't stop people. And it's their right to be able to take advantage of it. And it feeds a lot of needy people. And we seem to be controlling it in a very organized manner. I know it's organized chaos sometimes, but if you just can remember 10 or 15 years ago when this really started blowing up to what it is now, when you go down there, it's pretty darn organized, and I'm really proud of the staff that they've done and where they've come about it. My son this year worked for Parks and Rec, and he was down in the midst of it, dumping garbages and raking beaches, and he was in pretty much awe of how much there is, but they had it organized, and they keep it that way, and that, I'm pretty proud of what we've done with it.
Thank you. Victoria?
Thank you. I certainly have a love-hate relationship with that whole situation. I swear the peninsula tilts about 4 degrees when that whole thing is happening. Our staff has done an amazing job. Organized chaos is what it is. And I'm really proud of how it got dumped in the city of Kenai's lap. It was not our choice to do this. And I think we've rallied and done a pretty amazing job doing it. But I'd like to see some changes with it. I think that I think there's a lot of misuse, but that's something that the Fish and Game is going to have to make a determination on. In the meantime, I think we do a more than adequate job taking care of the whole fishery.
Thank you. Bridget.
When I first moved here in 2002, I moved from the interior, and the only dip netting that I had ever experienced was in Chitna, which was borderline fighting for your life to not fall in and die. So fish dip netting here was a completely different experience for me. And the first time I walked out my front door in July and August and September and probably parts of October, I couldn't figure out what that smell was. Why did it smell so bad? And that's because it wasn't being managed the way that it is now. The whole city of Kenai doesn't smell like it's rotting for the rest of the summer anymore, like it did in years ago. It is organized chaos, and God forbid you want to buy a gallon of milk in Kenai in July, because it's probably not going to happen. But people are respectful, and I think the city of Kenai has done a great job of respecting Alaskans' very important right that we all hold dearly to subsistence fish and hunt and. There are things that could be done a little differently. There may be some more opportunities for us to make a little bit of money. There's not a lot of places for people to camp, outside of the Walmart parking lot. Maybe there's some opportunities for us to expand some city properties to be used for campsites at that, that part of the year, or whatever the case may be. There's opportunities for us to make some money and organize things a little bit better. I also want to point out, I appreciate the number of jobs that this has created too. Parks and Rec for young people. My son was a TEO as well. So.
Thank you, Bridget. This next question for Victoria was submitted by a Kenai resident who says that she's seen her water and sewer rates go up almost every year. Did I miss Henry? I am so sorry. I was thinking I was doing such a good job.
No, I was thinking the first thing one of the first things you said was it was a cornerstone, and it's like, it's not a cornerstone from my perspective. It's matter of fact, I think I speak for a lot of folks. I kind of almost don't look forward to July. It's been one of the best months of the year, and it just what comes up comes in upon us here. But we have a $550,000 budget to manage that down there, and how it's been handled in the past as the city grew and kind of learned how to manage it. It's basically like managing a disaster, frankly, but it's the same one that comes every year, and we've gotten very good at it. Matter of fact, so well at it that it used to be all hands on deck. It involved all of the city, everybody thinking about it, and there was all of that cost too. And just thinking about it, it was just kind of awful, really. And I don't want to say it's just Parks and Rec, because it's more than that, but it's primarily Parks and Rec is the one that's handling it. We do hire some additional police and whatnot. So it's working pretty darn well down there. And frankly, I never smelled it like Bridget here suggested, but there were all the pictures, of course, of carcasses and whatnot, but that has been rectified, taken care of, and so I think it's going as best as it can be. There's other amenities we could probably provide, or somebody else, maybe RV spaces, camping, or something like that, to keep people in town a little bit longer to help with our economy here while they're here.
Thank you. And sorry again for skipping you. I was just so excited about this next question, which, as I said, was submitted.
Is it for Alex or for me again?
It's for Victoria, and then we'll go down.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
at least we got that right.
I'll do it first.
This next question was submitted by a Kenai resident who says she's seen her water and sewer rates go up almost every year. She'd like to know how the candidates could mitigate the impact of utility rate hikes on residents, especially seniors on a fixed income, in 90 seconds.
So this year was the first year, and I don't know how long we did not raise rates on our water, but it's all about the bugs. Water treatment is a pretty extensive process, and it's an expensive process. And I know that our current public works director worked really hard and has found an alternative chemical that is saving them a significant amount of money, but that's all, as we grow, it's going to continue to be expensive, and it's probably one of the infrastructure things that we're going to have to really be looking at.
Thank you. Richard?
I would agree. The infrastructure that's currently in place for our water and sewer, definitely modernization needs to be considered, which unfortunately is not free. But water and sewer is a pretty important thing. And it's one of the things that I think makes living in the city worth it. I appreciate that I don't have to worry about having a septic tank pumped. I don't have to worry about the water coming out of my faucet. And I think that's a benefit that's often worth paying for. I would say that in order to consider ways to prevent rates to continue to increase, everything in life is increasing, unfortunately, but maybe we could explore some creative options offering, maybe exemptions to certain classes of people, senior citizens or people with certain things in their life that would make them eligible for exemptions similar to the property tax exemption that the borough offers. Maybe a small discount on their water and sewer is something that the city could handle to help alleviate that burden for people like senior citizens on a fixed income.
Thank you, Bridget. And now it's your turn, Henry.
I'm a senior citizen. But no, I think the city of Kenai has excellent water. It's clear. And it's plentiful, and it's safe. And also, like Victoria mentioned, what happens down at the sewer treatment plant, it's a lot more work than just producing water. And at the other end, it's highly significant and expensive. If you've been here in town for very long, you might remember how water used to be. If you drove a bath, you might not be able to see your feet because of the tannins. It was clean water, but it wasn't pleasant. And also we were mixing water because of from different wells because of arsenic. All of that has been addressed, and all of that has a cost. And those costs have been studied. We have a rate study on what our water and sewer rates ought to be to keep up so the city can pay for it. And so that's been reflective of the rate increases. And I am sympathetic for those that are on a fixed income and having more difficulty in paying for the water and sewer. But we might consider some kind of a way to handle perhaps lower income people that, if they can show need and all of that. I think that's something that we probably have the ability to do. But otherwise, I think we need to really kind of pay our way. And I have done the math somewhat. My time's up. So you won't be able to hear about that now.
Yep. Thank you, Henry. Next, it's Alex Doffett.
So the city water and sewer is an amazing thing. We've toured both sides of it. It's really expensive. It is a huge expense to keep these things running and to add new. We just recently discussed we have a new pump that has to be put in, and we thought it was going to be about $1.5 million, and it came back as $4.5 million project. So that's just one pump. So when we're looking at these expenses of a little over $100 a month right now, I see it as fairly small for what we do. I lived in the city of Homer, and they had metered water, and I was back 20 years ago getting a $200-$400 bill when you do laundry and stuff or water your lawn too long. So I'm very thankful to have the bills that we have. As far as being able to, and I think we're very competitive on where we're at with cost for that, and I think we do a very good job of keeping those as low as possible. But everything is getting more expensive and we have a lot of projects coming up. I could see possibly looking into a low income application for some assistance on that, or fixed income, maybe a small grant fund set up with the city to be able to offset some of those costs. I mean, there's ideas out there and I'd love to hear them from citizens, what they think we could do to help with that, or how much funds we might be able to put into that to see how many people we could help with a certain amount of money, or, you know, $10 or $15 a month makes a big difference to some of these people when you're on a fixed income. And so if we could look into that application process, it of course would have to be private and those kind of things, but to see if they want to apply for it, maybe we could help them out in that. But I think our rates are pretty darn reasonable.
Thank you, Alex Stoffit. We're going to go next to Vic. Oh, no. Has everybody answered? Okay. Good. No. Second guessing a couple of things. So now we're going to Bridget Grimmie. The city is in the process of studying and inventorying all roads and streetlights with plans to put together a comprehensive strategy for maintenance and rehab of that infrastructure. How would you use such a document to make decisions about maintenance of city assets?
I think that in order to make good decisions, you have to make informed decisions. And I think an outside perspective is important in making those informed decisions. So using the information provided in the study to that has been provided in a way that I'm assuming would be unbiased to determine where do we first need to focus our needs? What are the largest area? What are the areas that need the largest amount of assistance, whether it's changes in road or putting new bulbs in the lamps every fall, because I will say that drives me crazy. There's nothing worse than a kid standing at the bus stop next to a streetlight that's off and the pitch black. So prioritizing, that would give us the opportunity to prioritize and make some unbiased decisions about what needs to happen, when, and how. And I think we also need to ask our citizens, in addition to the study, we need to ask the people that live here, what did they prioritize? Because what they might find important may be different from the people that have done the study for us. Because sometimes, you know, the home turf advantage matters. So I would focus on need and want, and then what can we afford to do that effectively and efficiently?
Thank you, Bridget Grimmie. We're going to Henry next up.
I think the study is exactly what we need, and it's going to help guide us and tell us what we're going to need to do with our lighting and with our roads. Something I did professionally, I was the rural road engineer for a decade, and I upgraded hundreds of miles of road in the borough. And while I was there, and we had a list of roads, and the inspectors, they knew what roads needed to be done, and then we did the engineering and made that complete. The study that we're having, the engineer is going to actually walk all of these roads and perhaps drive some of them too, and also with the maintenance guys that maintain these roads, and they know, you know, where their problems are and whatnot, and they're going to prioritize what needs to be done where, and that's, we're going to get that list, and then we're going to apply some dollars to it, and we're going to figure out how to do it. And I think I alluded earlier that some of these roads, we got a lot of gravel roads in the city of Kenai, which are easier to maintain, actually. But the surface gets worn off, and sometimes it's a matter of just replacing it and maybe digging out ditches. And that is something that I think our road staff can do in the summertime. And they could do several roads. And then also we might have a consultant contractor basically do some of the same things. Or where there's dig outs and some more technical work to be done, that can be accomplished. Then there are paving areas, and that's very expensive. Then you got a rotomill and whatnot. And perhaps the study might include some areas where we might want to pave, where we've got gravel roads. Residents want to do that. And we can do that right now. And I don't remember what it's called. I refer to it as a READ, but where the city can supplement in the neighborhood also and actually pay for that, or gravel upgrade for that matter.
Thank you, Henry. Next up, Alex Duffett.
So I was a big proponent of this road study. One of the things is I drive on a lot of roads, and I look around on these roads every day, hitting pothole after pothole and crack after crack. And when I looked into asking why aren't we doing some of these things and how much is it going to cost to fix some of these roads, the study we had previously done was from 2011, and the costs were way off. So by getting this new study, it's going to show us a prioritized list of how much is it going to cost in nowadays terms to fix these roads. And it's going to show in order which road is the worst in Kenai and which roads are the best, and what we can do and how much it's going to cost. And we're going to need to use that data along with the streetlight surveys also to prioritize with that, and the public opinion survey that we have coming up should have questions hopefully about that, or at least people can do comments about what their priorities are, and hopefully we can find a common ground from the lists of what needs to be fixed in priorities and pull it from the public opinion survey from the people to say these match and let's get these funds first and do that. It might not be the worst road in Kenai that needs fixed first if the second worst has the most people wanting to get fixed first. So I think it's going to be a game of playing the different surveys and trying to reach out to the people and use the data we have from both sources to put together to be the most efficient to get these fixed timely manner. And unfortunately, a lot of times with these kind of projects, doing multiple of them at the same time is much more efficient. So we might look at having to do a bond package or something, but that's, again, going to have to go to the people. And if the people want that fixed, then they might be willing to do that to get a lot of it done in a hurry.
Thank you, Alex Stothet. And we're going to Victoria Askin.
I too, is a proponent of the study for the roads and the lighting. And doing it in conjunction with the citizen survey, I think, is just going to make us all the more efficient. In addition, we have to worry about our kids, and we have to make sure there's lights where they're going to be getting on buses and off of buses. We live out where we don't have septic, and we have very few street lights. And my husband put lights up at the end of our driveway for our kids during the winter when the buses were coming, and we had three women stop and say, "My husband's not happy with you because you put a light up." So, but anyway, I think we need to put all those things together, and as Alex mentioned, it's just going to be way more efficient to put the roads and the community surveys. The other thing I would really like to see is, as we develop subdivisions, that we finish with the lighting project, because there's some subdivisions that don't have any lighting at all, and I think that needs to be a part of the project.
Thank you, Victoria Askin. And we're coming back around to Henry Nackstedt here. When you think about the city of Kenai in the next 5 or 10 years, where would you like to see it, and what is the city council or mayor's role in helping achieve that vision?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball, although I wish I did, you know. So we could say part of the equation is the LNG happening or not, and that would be huge. And I think that the city is prepared for, or will be prepared for an LNG if that happens. It's going to come in phases. It's not going to come here first. You know, we have the water, the sewer. We have a lot of the assets. We have their airport and whatnot, and the port, but a lot of the other things that are going to have to happen are going to happen from the LNG when they come. We're looking at housing or something like that. The city doesn't build housing. We have property. They probably will build camps out there. So I'm probably getting off the point of what you said, but that is foremost on my mind, is what's going to happen with that. The city, the mayor is basically the chairman of the board and a leader of that group, and has a pretty big stick when it comes to perhaps getting things done or encouraging that and getting out into the public and being that face at different forums and whatnot, and talking about what our needs are and what we need to do.
Thank you, Henry Nackstedt. Going to Alex Stothet.
Yes, I see a city with a need for growth and revitalization. I want to look to our future. We've got all these great ideas coming in from the public here soon, between the Parks and Rec plan, and I want to look at what the citizens feel is their future is. But right now, we need to start looking and planning for the future of growth, whether it be from an LNG or not. We need to look to, how do we get more people to move in? How do we supply them with jobs that they can afford to live here? And by doing that, how does a city promote that? We're going to end up, needing to rezone or rework lands, put city lands that we have up for sale so we can get developers in here to grow and do affordable housing. Maybe look at ways to incentivize businesses to come in. If we get more air travel coming in, we can monopolize that and use that to our ability to really look to the future, redoing our infrastructure now so that it can handle future growth. We need to start budgeting for these large projects that need to happen to be able to handle this future growth. And we got to look at how much is this going to cost. And then ultimately, making this a place that people want to come and want to have and raise their families, getting those young families in, those starter level homes, and looking at our green spaces with this Parks and Rec master plan that's coming up. It'll be really exciting to me to see what people want to see. You know, they have the field house now in Soldotna, and that's super exciting for them. What can we make as exciting? I want to see something in our future that is exciting, and I think the mayor has a good role in trying to push for that.
Thank you, Alex Stothett. Moving to Victoria Askin.
Thank you. Everything Alex and Henry have said is I completely agree with. I don't know if we're going to get an LNG project. That's still way up in the air, but we need to be preparing our infrastructure for that. And I hear people tell me that the city is dying, but nobody can tell me what it is they want changed. So I'm looking forward to the survey, and I hope we get a lot of really good participation so we can see what it is that we need, that the citizens want to see happen in the city. Do we need to change some things so that it's more enticing for businesses? Do we, we need to market our schools. We need to market our programs. We have some pretty amazing programs here in the city, and I'd like to see those expand and we just keep growing.
Thank you, Victoria Askin. Moving to Bridget Grimmie.
I think that the answer for this question is similar to the waterfront question. How do we attract people to invest money, to spend money, and to make money here? And I think those things all go hand in hand. We provide affordable housing for single family dwellings or multifamily dwellings for that matter that are as affordable and accessible. We have jobs available because we're attracting more businesses. Then those people want to come to Kenai because they can live, they can work here. They also are going to go get groceries here. They're going to go to theaters here. They're going to spend time in our green areas. They're going to live and work in Kenai. And how do we do that as a council? What is our responsibility? Our responsibility is to be one step ahead of the game, to be considering what we have now, what's working, what's not working, where do we want to be, what are the potential barriers between where we are and where we want to be, and how do we get there? And strategizing for all of those things in between. We've been talking about an LNG plant for 150 years. That might happen. It might not. But how do we get other businesses here that are going to continue to help Kenai grow and be the city that we all love it and want it to continue to be?
Thank you, Bridget Grimmie. And unfortunately, that's going to bring us to the end of the question portion of our forum. All the candidates will now have 90 seconds to give a closing statement, and we're going to keep going down the line. So it'll be Alex Stothett first. Without any motorcycle sounds.
Throw a chicken sound out there, man. Mix it up a little bit. Now, I just want to say, you know, thank you for everybody who's tuning into these debates and forums. Thank you for everybody with the great questions they've had. I really look forward to serving the community and continuing to serve the community as your mayor. I really have always striven to make the community a number one priority from our business. Getting involved in the community, and I want to keep this community growing. I am very heavily invested in this community. I've made it my home my whole life, and I want it to be a place my kids can come back and make their home. And that's why I look to the future. I don't want to be status quo. I know people want to see change. I know there's things that people aren't satisfied with, and I want to be the mayor that is going to reach out to you and listen and get those ideas and try to do what we can the best, to the best of the city's ability and my ability, to make them happen. I really feel that, you know, even the most the happiest citizens still have something they want to see change. Everybody has an idea of some little thing, and even the little things are sometimes the hardest things to fix, but I want to strive to see what we can make happen and make it a better community for everybody. So I really look forward to your vote. If anybody has any questions, feel free to reach out to me. I'm always available. I might be busy at work, but I will get back to you as soon as I can. And I look forward to the interesting conversations. I've had some really great ones, both good and both a little bit like, wow, I didn't even think about that. So it's great to hear the compliments from everybody, and I look forward to hearing ideas for the future.
Thank you, Alex Stothett. Victoria Askin.
Thank you. So I'm looking forward to my second term as your city council member, representing you and listening to your concerns. I return every phone call I get. I answer almost every email I get, unless it's something that we can't answer. I look forward to any interaction and ideas and whatever we can help with. I look forward to seeing the city continue to be the vital place that it is.
Thank you, Victoria Askin. Bridget Grimmie.
Growing up, my dad always said, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And I believe that. And I have worked very hard to be that person in my professional life, my personal life. And my husband and I have worked very hard to raise our children to believe that as well through obviously telling them all the time, but modeling that behavior as well. And I think that that's what this is for me. This is my opportunity to be part of the solution. Not that I see that there are lots and lots of things wrong, but to be part of making them even better than they already are and fixing the things that are a problem. I bring a fresh perspective to the city council. I have not served in city government before. I've served in a myriad of other leadership roles. And I think I bring a new perspective to the council that hasn't been seen or heard before. And I want to hear what your concerns are. I want to be the person that represents the concerns and the questions and the suggestions of the people that can't attend a city council meeting or can't serve because they're busy working all the time or raising kids or just don't want to, but have concerns and want to be heard. So I feel like my responsibility would be to represent the needs and the requests of the citizens of Kenai, not necessarily my own.
Thank you, Bridget Grimmie. And Henry Nackstedt, close us out.
Thank you very much. I love Kenai. It's my home, and I'm here to stay. And, you know, we've talked an awful lot about infrastructure and whatnot, and that's going to take care of itself. We're gonna work on that, and we talked about it a lot today. But really what I think is important and things that and there are little things that we can make changes together with is the quality of life here and why what brings people to here and to Kenai. Make that right, come here and stay. It might be, how about the Boys and Girls Club? We've got them moved in here, and we donated property, and we're expanding on that. Young families are going to be coming in and using that facility. The Triumphant Theater, wonderful facility down there, and that's right next to an industrial park, and that will become developed at that part of town as it grows. The Art Center is another jewel in our city, and I see that growing. As a matter of fact, First Friday is tomorrow. If you want to go, it's beautiful, and they could expand on that. The Kenai Historical Cabins, they just closed for the summertime. A great asset there that is working along with the Chamber of Commerce on that. I got to read this one. The Kenai Peninsula Housing Initiative. It's an organization that has been building. If you have been out down Readout, there's a whole lot of lower income. They're very nice and senior housing down there. And we're looking at expanding upon that. And I want to see that keep moving. We've got a private investor, Clint Hall, Hall Quality Homes. If you right next to that, pretty much there's a whole bunch of new homes that's been built in there. In the last 2 years, we've had over 60 building permits, and I see that growing even more. And you have the ability to cut me off. I'm the last one, so I guess I have to stop there, but I don't want to stop there. I want to continue as your mayor and do all of those things and more things that I have on my list here. Quality of life.
Thank you, Henry Nackstedt. That's going to bring us to the end of our Kenai City Council Forum. Thanks so much to our two mayoral candidates and our two city council candidates for joining us. As a reminder, this will be the latest forum in our candidate forum series. Next week, we'll be at Soldotna Public Library on Wednesday to hear from candidates for Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly's Soldotna seat. And on Thursday, we'll be in Seward with the candidates for Seward Mayor at the Seward Community Library. You can re-listen to this hour on KDLL.org and RadioKenai.com, or read a condensed version in next week's edition of the Peninsula Clarion. Election Day is October 7th. Thank you all for participating, and have a good night.
And that's all for this week's Kenai Conversation. Thanks again to participants Henry Nackstedt and Alex Stothet, candidates for mayor of the city of Kenai, and to Kenai City Council candidates Victoria Askin and Bridget Grimmie. Glenise Petty is also running for city council. You can hear the Kenai Conversation every week on Wednesday at 10 a.m. and Saturday at 5 p.m. here on KDLL. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for listening.